Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense. Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project. Everybody's waiting.
People will do anything for those who encourage their dreams, justify their failures, allay their fears, confirm their suspicions, and help them throw rocks at their enemies.
First of all, I'm going to do the thing you're never supposed to do on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds exactly like something Hitler would say.
Okay. Sometimes you need a friend, not the ones that just show up and don't put nothing in. You know the ones that lend a hand and want to see you win. When you come up on that lick, make sure you cut them in. And then, sometimes you need a foe, one to keep your eyes open, keep you on your toes. You know the ones that want to keep you where you've been before. But I can't go, no, I can't go. And whoa, sometimes I need a check.
Hello, friends. This is Brett. Today is Friday, August 28th, and Friday is not a day that we typically release podcasts, but something special this week. So yesterday, my friend Nathan Fraser and I recorded our pilot episode of a new monthly supporter-only series that we are going to be doing on the topics of marketing and manipulation. In other words, a conversation about persuasive techniques that if you're unaware of can easily be used against you, and if you are aware of them, you can use them to your advantage. In, and here's the best part, an authentic and honest way. So we recorded this yesterday, and I was like, damn, that's so good, I want to put out the whole show tomorrow as a podcast, and then after this, it's subscriber only, people who support us on Patreon or the AV Club. It's also available for Nathan's Free Market Squad. And you can learn more about that by visiting Nathan's website, copyandfunnels.com. That's copyandfunnels.com. Nathan is also the host of the Dark Arts of Marketing podcast. You can find links for that in the show notes as well, where he, on a weekly basis, has similar conversations to the one you're going to hear today. So if you enjoy today's show, definitely go check out The Dark Arts of Marketing. This is a show that I've wanted to do with Nathan Fraser for a long time, and I really just couldn't fit it into my production schedule. But a couple of months ago, we had to put our film show, Picture of the Month Club, on pause. And I've gotten lots of requests to do a supporter-only show or an ongoing show that has a focus on media analysis. So this is going to cover a lot of those bases. And because Fridays are typically about alerting you to all this entertaining and educational work we do behind our paywall with these free bonuses, I want to just take a moment to thank the people who have been responsive to that by supporting the show. One such person is Joseph L. from Astoria, New York. Ooh. Hold on a second. I got to dig up an old jingle here.
New subscriber geography trivia. You just say a person's name and they tell a fact about where they live.
Every voice in that a cappella group is me. What do you think of that? Yes, Joseph from Astoria, New York, which is in Queens. And man, were some people born there. Talented people like Tony Bennett, Cyndi Lauper. Were they all musicians, Brett? Absolutely not. Christopher Walken was born there as well. As was Gordon Willis, the great cinematographer, who a lot of people say made the film The Godfather Part II too dark. But what do you know, dickhead? Maybe you just need a better TV. Also, Astoria is a popular place for filming locations, including Serpico with Al Pacino, A Bronx Tale with Robert De Niro, and yes, Martin Scorsese's Goodfellas had filming locations in Astoria as well. Thanks, Joseph. Sounds like you're probably having a really great time there.
New subscriber geography trivia.
So if you like what you hear today and you want to hear future episodes of this, as of right now, unnamed series, we're kicking a few names around. Why don't you be the person who names this series? Send me an email, brett@schoolsucksproject.com. If you name this show, I will say your name on the show, if you're into that. Just let me know if I can use your last name. I'm always very hesitant to do that. Especially if I'm like, yeah, this dude lives right down the street from where they filmed Serpico. You know, the town where Patrick McGowan from The Prisoner was born. I'm not trying to dox anybody. So today's conversation is about a curious little book called One Sentence Persuasion. And all that's explained right at the beginning, so we're going to get right to it. Remember to check out Nathan's work at copyandfunnels.com and the Dark Arts of Marketing podcast. And we will continue this conversation in September. And, of course, go to patreon.com/schoolsucks to help us out. Or schoolsucksproject.com/AV. Have a great weekend, everyone. Take care.
Oh, men gon' lie, women gon' lie. You're looking for the truth and the numbers don't hide. Looking for the root of all evil, then you need to go open up the briefcase, see what your eyes. Everybody claim to be great at spa times, but they never spend a day in the rain in the front line. No lie. Stop playing on my phone line. Shoot, lock and load. Pull up in the space coupe with the roof optional. Wonder why they follow suit. I've been groomed from the womb. Came out of my mama Gucci with some running tennis shoes. Faster than the speed and bullet.
Is this going to be for the School Sucks support podcast, or is this going to be for the extra content?
This is going to be for the extra content, though I probably will put out a preview of it so people can know about it and also get directed to your stuff on a scale of thousands.
Sweet. And what's your time constraints look like?
I'm good till like 4:15.
Brett, how do you spell your last name?
V-E-I-N-O-T-T-E.
Revenant Talks, One Sentence Persuasion. All right, and I'm going to click the go live button. And we are live on Facebook, and let's just go ahead and jump into it. So this is going to be a collaboration project between myself and Brett, and I'm going to hand it over to Brett to start it off.
Okay, so thank you, Nathan, and to anybody who's watching us live. That's awesome. There's nothing more energizing. I love this. So thank you, Nathan, for making that possible as well. I formulated the idea of this ongoing conversation, a once-a-month conversation, about a year ago. In the meantime, Nathan started a podcast basically doing exactly what I wanted to do, but because it was without me, I said, no, we can still do my idea. And I waited because I didn't have time to do this until recently. But what I want to do is we look at principles of marketing and principles of propaganda and try to teach people how to use one and defend themselves against the other. So correct me if I'm wrong. Is that basically the essence of this new podcast that you've been doing now for a couple of months?
Yeah, I talk about marketing, but I talk about it in a way that also helps people gain some intellectual self-defense, because a lot of the tricks and tactics that work in marketing are heavily exploited in
perception.
Politics.
Yeah, perception management and in media and in a lot of this corporate wokeness. I think another thing is that a lot of our conversations, like month to month, are going to be triggered by things that we see in current events. There's several touches of new stuff that might come up in our conversation today as I think of relevant examples. But I'm looking out at the world very confused as to what a lot of people are thinking right now, especially in corporate America, with some of the behavior and some of the signaling that they're doing. So I'm sure that's going to be a feature of the conversation as well.
I like to talk about that too. The whole get woke, go broke phenomenon that businesses just don't seem to be learning from. So here's a weird thing. A lot of the social justice stuff that's made its way into marketing, a lot of the social justice stuff is, it's really just Marxism with a little bit of virtue signaling on top to help defend itself or help deflect any
shield.
Kind of criticism.
Yeah, it's a battering ram and a shield. Right.
It's weird to me that a lot of corporations are adopting this into their messaging since it's so anti-capitalist. I mean, a large part of most of these movements is we want to dismantle capitalism. And it's weird to see businesses that have made so much money off of capitalism embracing ideas that disdain capitalism. But I like to explore that. we'll probably have a lot of different topics that we can go through as this project progresses.
Right. So what do you, just in a nutshell, and we will expand on this in maybe more today and probably in future episodes, what do you make of it? Because I have lots of theories, and I asked you this question because today we're going to be talking about a fairly obscure book by an even more mysterious and obscure author, from what I can tell. It's called The One Sentence Persuasion Course by Blair Warren. It's only 7 years old. It's not some dusty old book that we uncovered. It is like one of two books that I can find by this author, he or she. I don't even know if it's male or female, Blair Warren. And I don't know if you do either, but there is a Blair Warren blog that was very active in 2013, the year this book was published. And then this person just seems to disappear. So lots of intrigue around that. We're going to get into that soon. But, you know, as I think about the intellectual power in the marketing and advertising public relations departments of these corporations, how could they seem to be so clueless? Do they actually know what they're doing? Or is this just complete optics and really kind of a fear response to the cancel culture that's out there right now? But what's your assessment of why they're doing this when they know it's going to be so alienating and it seems like such a short-term reactive kind of strategy?
I think there's two reasons. I think number one, marketing departments are filled with fresh out of college students.
Oh, yeah.
And they just got 4 to 6 years of indoctrination into thinking and seeing the world through this lens. And now they think everybody sees the world this way. They come in and they start working in marketing. They have their friends that work in the HR department, and the owners of these businesses say, hey, what are the kids into? And they say, well, the kids are really into social justice. And so I think there's that. I also think we have the phenomenon of, and this is what happened in back in the day when communism took over Russia and China and parts of Germany, at least part of the culture. We have this, when you're successful and you use capitalism to get to the top, and then you get lazy and comfortable in your position at the top, communism is a way to close the door behind you. I'm successful. I'm rich. My business, if we have a nationalization of everything, my business is going to be the one that the government says, hey, you've got the exclusive contract for this. Mm-hmm. So you, Nike and Adidas, you guys get to provide our shoes because you already have proven that you know how to do it, and we'll stop anybody from competing with you. So I think that there's a little bit of that as well. That probably goes a little bit deeper, but mainly I think it's just the marketing department is ran by kids who have drank in the Kool-Aid, and the people higher up in the business are just trusting blindly and not realizing how divisive and how out of touch these kids are with the rest of the population.
Right. And a lot of this incursion is happening in corporations through the human resources departments as well, right? Where that is actually shifting corporate culture. And we warned about this 4, 5, 6 years ago on School Sucks. You and I have talked about this before, that all of this stuff happening in higher education is worth paying attention to because these people are being directed where to go as they leave these schools with these degrees. You go into education, you go into law, you go into human resources, you go into marketing. You certainly go into journalism. And, you know, I've been having lots of private conversations with people who work in corporate America, one person who works in finance, people who work in other industries as well. And this unconscious bias training is becoming the culture. So it would make sense that there's going to be, because this is such a stupid hoop to jump through, I think that the people who are at the C-level, like executive, you know, the leadership of a company understands that this is an inconvenience when, you know, the author of a book like White Fragility starts meddling around in the function of the company that was already complicated enough. And it's like trying to make your employees happy, trying to grow, trying to do all these things. And now, you know, we have to cater to this proposition is you're racist and sexist if you don't do these things. So what I've said to people who are dealing with these problems at work is like those people, there's a natural alliance there. If you're feeling, you know, this way about what's happening in your company, you probably have a natural alliance with the people who are running your company because they're not really on board with all this, right? But that is with agreeing with everything that you're saying. And one of the reasons why I brought that up is a question that I think I already know the answer to, but I'm not sure because I'm more novice in marketing. Is it possible, through the lens of something like one-sentence persuasion, these companies or these politicians, mostly on the left, who just seem completely lost, completely disconnected from their public, you know, thinking about, you know, the DNC was last week, and Luke Rutkowski from We Are Change, by the way, has a great T-shirt for sale on his website right now. It's supposed to be like a Biden campaign T-shirt, and it says Rich White Guy and Cop 2020, right? So it's like this is the party of the people. But is there something more clever going on? We'll see. First, I want to get into just an overview of the one-sentence persuasion course by Blair Warren. You, Nathan, originally pitched this idea to me as a show, so I just wanted to hear a little bit about how you encountered the book and why it resonated with you so much.
Yeah, so you and Daryl Becker were having a discussion about the tons of different aspects to COVID-19 that were kind of flying under the radar in the mainstream discussion. And I think this book was mentioned by you in that conversation. Drew Sample actually turned me on to this when it was still like a little mini course, probably the same year that it came out, back in 2005, 2006. Drew was like, hey, you got to check this out. And so I went and checked it out. I was like, oh, this is cool. And it was one of those things that I put in the index file in the back of my brain. Hey, it'd be cool to do a show about this sometime in the future. And then you and Daryl were having a conversation. You brought it up. And then I was like, oh, man, I still need to do a show about that. So I hit you up. I said, hey, Brett, let's do a show about this. That's the long story about how this episode came into creation.
All right. Now, you mentioned it. I've been going through your free Market Squad course material, and you have a training called Social Media Shitposting for Fun and Profit, which I love. And I did maybe last month. I went through all that. I don't want to give the whole thing away. I definitely recommend the people who are in my supporting audience go and check out what Nathan is doing with Free Market Squad, and there'll be links in the show notes. But there's like a dozen or so trainings available there. And one of them is, you know, the thing I think you are the master of. I call you the world champion of Facebook. You are the only person ever who I have taken screenshots of your Facebook post and posted them to my Instagram and then sent them back to Facebook through Instagram by saying also post to Facebook. Now, I'm thinking like, why do I do that? Why do I do that with so much of Nathan's stuff? I've probably done that 10 times in the last 4 years. And the reason why, and I think this is one of the lessons of that course, I want you to talk about it a little bit. And I'm talking about the social media shitposting course. You say the things that people want to say to people, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, you see this thing and it's like, you can't translate it into your own words, or I can't, and make it into my own post. I go, nope, that's it. That's what I wish I had said. Screenshot and repost, right? So one of the most important aspects of like doing well as far as social media reach and persuasion, which is going to be the focus of our conversation today, is saying to your audience what they want to say to their, finger quotes, audience, right?
Mm-hmm. It's funny because we go to social media because we want to tell our story to the world. We want the world to know what we had for supper or what little Molly got for a grade on her homework assignment in school. We want to talk about ourselves to the world. I found that with social media, speaking for myself is not what tends to go viral. Telling my story, saying what I want to say, doesn't tend to go as viral as saying what my audience wants to say. Because when I say what my audience wants to say, they're going to share that. They're going to say, oh, I wish I would have been able to, exactly like what you said, I wish I would have been able to formulate that to say it that way.
Mm-hmm.
The next step to that, and this is where really going viral, I've had some of my posts, a lot of my straight up marketing, blatant marketing pitches get hundreds of shares. And I get a lot of people that buy my stuff that come from friends of friends of friends who saw my post, shared 8 links down the line, like way disconnected from me. So I get a lot of sales, not even having to promote, just knowing how to get stuff shared. When you speak for yourself, you're not going to get very many shares. When you say what your audience wants to say, you're going to get a lot of shares. But when you say what their audience wants to say, when you know who your audience is and you know what their audience wants to say, that's when they start sharing your stuff and then their audience starts sharing your stuff. And that's when all the algorithms say, oh, this person isn't even friends with this person and they're still sharing their stuff. We need to put this in as many feeds as possible. And so when I approach anything, that's usually my thing is this something that my audience wishes that they could say, or is this something that my audience's audience wishes that they could say? And then I typically formulate that into some sort of sales pitch. And I feel bad because I'm somebody who advocates for paid advertising, but I get a majority of my sales from organic advertising. And that's kind of my biggest secret.
Right. Absolutely. So number one, I just learned that I need to stop screenshotting stuff because I'm not helping you. I just need to share it on Facebook. So I'm sending that message to Facebook that like, hey, look at this guy. And a screenshot doesn't do that. So there's a couple of attributes, though, that I just wanted to talk about inside of like saying what people want to say to their people. And their people could be like all of their friends from high school or college or their family that's just posting annoying, from their perspective, unenlightened, mainstream, political kind of shit, right? And that's very bothersome. And then in comes Nathan with the thing that like, yes, that's what I want to say to all of these people who, as far as I'm concerned, just don't get it. So you give a whole bunch of attributes of like successful social media copywriting in that course. But I just want to touch on the us versus them nature of a lot of your posts or positioning, right? Where you're staking out a certain ground and allowing people to rally around that place, right? That's something that you kind of come back to where I don't want to say you're being repetitive, but you are saying a lot of the same types of things over and over again to kind of rally the troops in that respect, which is perfectly translatable to one sentence persuasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of look at one sentence persuasion. I think that if I would have named it, I wouldn't have named it one sentence persuasion. I would have named it how to be an instant ally, because that's really what it's all about. It's about how to, through four or five different things, how to instantly position yourself as somebody people can trust, as somebody who people want to be around, as somebody who people want to have on their side. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, a lot of times my posts are, hey, I'm the one who's willing to plant the flag on this hill. And some of you maybe haven't given it as much thought, so you can't articulate it the same way. Some of you maybe just don't have the balls to openly say this. I do have the balls to openly speak for you. I am willing to be the one that takes the arrows because I'm confident enough in this belief. And doing that, saying what they want to say, saying what maybe they haven't figured out how to say, or saying what they maybe are just a little bit too timid to say, instantly positions you as not only an ally, but as an authority figure. And when you've got something to sell, being seen as an ally and being seen as an authority figure, those two things go a long way in getting people to the point where they trust you enough to buy from you.
Right. So to just tie in to a lot of the messages of the School Sucks project, people spend a whole good formative chunk of their life not feeling like they're visible, not feeling like they're respected, not feeling like they're listened to. And there is a way that a genuine person can take the five core principles of one sentence persuasion and use them as basically a way of signaling, hey, I get what you're about. I'm into a win-win relationship where part of the win for you is that you feel visible. And through that visibility, you get some kind of problem that you're having solved.
Yeah. And we didn't really talk about this before we jumped on, but if it's possible, I'd kind of like to go through each of the points of the sentence and kind of give an example of how they apply to marketing, and then also give an example of how they apply to politics. So that, number one, people can say, okay, I can use this in my marketing, but then they can also say, oh, I see how this has been used against me. And I went through and I brought up, I made a quick note before we started to make sure that I had examples from both sides of the aisle. Because like many people in your audience, I actually agree with some of the stuff that I hear lefties say. I agree that police brutality needs to be talked about. Mm-hmm. Police accountability needs to be talked about.
Right.
I also agree with some of the stuff that I hear Trump supporters talk about. I'm kind of like a middle of the ground or middle of the road guy when it comes to politics. I don't really favor one side over the other. But I do notice these marketing tactics in both of them. So I kind of wanted to go through how these points in the one sentence persuasion, how they apply to marketing, and then also give it an example or two of how these points are used by politicians on both sides of the aisle to win people over and get people on their sides.
Absolutely. So right there, you've nailed what my purpose is for this conversation and future conversations. That's exactly what I'm looking to do. Some people are listening to this and they don't even know what the sentence is yet. The subtitle of this book, 27 Words to Make the World Do Your Bidding. So it's kind of a long sentence, but I'll read it and we'll go from there. People will do anything for those who encourage their dreams, justify their failures, allay their fears, confirm their suspicions, and help them throw rocks at their enemies. So we'll start at the beginning, encouraging your dreams.
Well, first of all, before we even get into that, I'm going to do the thing you're never supposed to do on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds exactly like something Hitler would say.
I mean, it goes both ways. And that I think that's like the really important thing when I introduced this, talking about like, are politicians actually using principles like this, even if they haven't read this book? Are they using these principles effectively in some way? Because Trump is the master of this, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that. Like, all five of these things are deeply embedded into most of his messaging, right? Mm-hmm. And I would say that is kind of, you know, I would put him more on the nefarious side as a manipulator. But then there's people who are more in a gray area, you know, like Stefan Molyneux, who's certainly done a lot of good in the world, but has used these tactics very effectively. Even before this book was written, you could see him using a marketing model that relied on most of, if not all of, these five things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And anybody who's successful and has a keen understanding of what works and what doesn't work in marketing is going to pick up on some of these things, even if it's just subconsciously. And I think this is a very short list. I think there's a lot more to successful marketing, but this is a good, healthy place to understand the fundamentals of it. And so let's just kind of jump into the first one, encouraging their dreams. For a marketer, the point is we don't want to shoot down your dreams. You've got a dream to go on a vacation. I don't want to tell you, oh, going on a vacation is stupid. I want to tell you, oh, yeah, I've got the perfect vacation package for you. Mm-hmm. You've got a dream to drive around in a sports car. I don't want to tell you, oh, no, you need to get something more economical, or you need to get something more. You need to get a minivan. No, I want to sell you the sports car. So I want to encourage your dream of having a sports car, encourage your dream of having a motorcycle, encourage your dream of having a successful business. That's what I do, is I help people with their marketing. So I want to encourage those dreams off the bat.
Wait, why? Because sometimes people could have dreams that are kind of dumb. Now, just hear me out. Okay. One of the most important things that I learned about doing sales is that after you build a rapport, this is straight sales guerrilla stuff right here, right? Building that rapport, building that relationship, you're kind of moving on to a needs analysis after that, right? So one of the things that we've been talking about behind the scenes at School Sucks is like, it's this golden age of opportunity with lots of people who would be very interested in the things that we're doing right now, but there's no language bridge built between the way we talk and the problems they have, right? They don't know what unschooling is. They've never heard of self-directed learning. They don't know what Praxis is. They don't know there's alternatives to college. And we talk about those things all the time. And we could talk about them at any volume or in any volume, as far as like, you know, the amount of content that we're producing. And if we're not speaking the same language, they're never going to find us, right? So we have to be able to speak a language that responds to the problems they have and the questions those problems are leading them to ask, right? So maybe some people don't know exactly what they need. They have a feeling of what they want that they think is going to satisfy their needs, but they're dreaming of something that is just a sort of nebulous picture of what they actually need, like the whole pickup artistry thing. It's like, do you want to sleep with more women? Yes. Okay. Well, what I'm actually going to sell you is what you need to do that, to achieve that want, which is like you have to have more confidence, you have to be a better communicator, et cetera, et cetera. So there is, I would say, a benefit to encouraging people's dreams as far as that visibility and relationship building is concerned, because again, we have to go back to school. People have their dreams and their desires and just their basic wants shit on for like, you know, 12 years of their lives by their teachers, by their parents, by school administrators. And, you know, we always talk on School Sucks about there's this negative association with everything that you encounter in school. Unfortunately, chief among them is learning, right? Because school is forced and boring, people have a negative association towards physical fitness. It was forced on me. Reading, it was forced on me. Learning generally, it was forced on me. So if you are not an encourager of dreams, if you're telling people that, you know, this is the responsible for your own good thing that you have to do, they already have an association to people who did that before. So as far as visibility is concerned, to just say, yeah, you got some dreams, I'll hear you out. I like that. I like that you think that way. I think is a way to forge a new relationship that a lot of people, especially if you're positioning yourself as an authority who can solve a problem for them, they haven't had a lot of relationships with authority like that in their lives.
Mm-hmm. So there's two things to it. Number one, it's the overlaying of maps. You have to find out where does your map overlay in order to kind of bring the two, your vision and their vision, into focus together. Also, what you mentioned, a lot of people, especially if they're coming straight out of high school or college or whatever, or maybe even later on in life, maybe they're married and they have a spouse that's always shitting on their dreams and being like, that's a stupid, you're going to go after a crazy new hobby that you think is going to make you rich. Are you serious? When they get that from everybody in their life, from their parents, from their significant other, from their teachers, and then their friend says, oh, dude, that's an awesome idea, let's talk about that, all of a sudden, that's an instant friendship. It's an instant ally. So being somebody who, a lot of what makes marketing good is knowing what is their dream. Mm-hmm. They dream about having, maybe it's not just the vacation. Maybe it's this vacation is what's going to save my marriage. This vacation is going to be, this honeymoon is what's going to set my marriage off on the right foot. This charter school is going to be what helps my kid get a step up in life compared to everybody else. What is that dream? If you know what that dream is and you can explain it better than they can explain it to themselves,
right? Yes.
All of a sudden they're like, okay, you've already won me over. So from the very beginning point where you're just trying to figure out where's their map at, where's my map at, and let's find a little bit of overlay with what destination they're trying to get to. If you have to pivot and adjust, or you're promising them the applesauce and you're going to give them the medicine wrapped up in the applesauce, whatever the case may be, if you know what their dream is, or if you can explain the dream better than they can explain it to themselves, instantly they're going to see you as an ally. And when it comes to politics, encouraging their dreams, you mentioned Trump, make America great again. How many people aren't romanticizing the past when one parent could work and they could afford a house and they could afford two cars and the other parent could stay home and raise the kids and there wasn't all this racial tension and there wasn't all this worry about the economy and there wasn't all these problems that we're facing now and life was easier? Or on the other side, Obama was great at this too. Hope and change. How is that? That's exactly encouraging their dreams. You hope for a better future. You want change and you want something better. Joe Biden's right now, his campaign slogan is build back better. And it's weird because that's not just him. I've heard Justin Trudeau say it. I've heard somebody from the UN recently say it. So it seems like it's more than just him that's using that. But
wait, what is it again? Build back better?
Build back better. Yeah. And I think it's a horrible, whoever they paid to come up with that slogan, I think that was a bad job, but it gets at the point of encouraging their dreams. We want to build back better, come back from where we're at and even be better than we were. In politics, you know, from hope and change to MAGA to build back better, it's about encouraging their dreams. If you can encourage the people's dreams, they're going to see you as somebody who's going to be willing to help them fight for those dreams.
Okay, now I'm wondering, while we're in the political, if there's like a more loosely connected version of this as well, right? So it's not exactly encouraging dreams, but giving people the sense that they can save the world, right? So this was a feature in libertarian activism obviously, again, to mention Stefan Molyneux, who used to use that phrase that that's what we're trying to do. We're engaged in a project to save the world. Geez. Yeah. With the way things have played out in the last year, I'm thinking he might have been right, but it speaks to virtual signaling a little bit, right? Like engaged in a project of righting all these wrongs and the sort of self-aggrandizement of that people feel, like without actually doing very much, just by using focus-tested slogans and ways of posting and kind of copying a very acceptable way of feeling and acting that has been rebranded as like the resistance or revolutionary, you can get that sense that you're saving the world, you're doing something really important. So it's not exactly encouraging a dream, but it's creating visibility in a sense. It's false, but it's kind of playing into the same emotions as outright encouragement of dreams.
I think so. And it's also encouraging the desire to play the role of a hero in your life. A lot of people see themselves as the hero of their own movie, and they have dreams of, like you said, saving the world. And I see right now in the conflict, I see it on both sides. I have friends that are leftists, and they're saying, we're trying to save the world from these boogaloo boys and these Nazis. And then I have people on the other side in my friend's circle of friends that are saying, we're trying to save the world from these commies and these Marxists. And both of them see themselves as on an epic quest to save the future of America. Mm-hmm. And yeah, definitely encouraging their dreams and getting people on board. And then as we see, steering them down, like you always say, if you can't start the parade or stop the parade, jump in front of the parade and direct it where you want it to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a good transition to the second one if you're ready to move on. Right.
Sure.
Because politics kind of has this problem where lots of people talk about solutions and then none of them ever work. So they have to kind of have an explanation for why. It needs to be somebody else's fault why things didn't shake out or why this social program didn't produce prosperity for these people that it targeted even after 50 or so years of trying. So that moves us on to justifying their failures. And the essence of this, I guess, is giving people or again, that visibility of it's okay, you know, let's break away from politics and go back to the individual. It's okay that you haven't been able to, excel to or get to where you want because you haven't been given the right opportunities, the right knowledge. So again, it's kind of like laying up to a solution. I have the knowledge, I have the opportunity, I have the tools or the guidelines. But that's basically the gist of it, right? It's okay that you failed because things have been kind of stacked against you in one way or another.
Well, and it gives them an out.
Right.
Here's the deal. If you want to help me and you come at me and you're like, oh, Nathan, you're so stupid. And the reason you can't do anything is because this about you and this about you and this about you. Well, that's just going to kill any moralization that I have to try and fix whatever problem it is.
Sure.
But if you give me someone else to blame, then I'm able to say, oh, it was their fault. So I can try again. It's not my fault that I'm fat. It's the evil corn subsidies fault that I'm fat.
Right.
It's not my fault that I dropped out of high school. It's the stupid teachers that were one size fits all. It's not my fault that I failed at this. Now that I'm no longer blaming myself, I'm ready to start taking steps towards a new direction. But as long as I'm blaming myself, I'm not going to take any action towards a solution because I'm stuck in self-doubt. I'm stuck in self-pity. And that's not the mindset you need people to be in. So you got to give them somebody else to blame. And not just to blame, but to say, hey, it's not you. It's because of this. And it doesn't even have to be somebody. It can be all kinds of different things. But you give them a reason to alleviate themselves of the self-doubt, alleviate themselves of the self-pity and the self-blame. And then they're ready to take steps in the proper direction.
Yeah, that's interesting because it almost seems like giving them somebody else to blame would be creating an invitation to get stuck where they are forever. Right. So to use it as a motivation, if you already know, if you are like really committed to a solution for this person, I could see why that works. And maybe I'm thinking about it more in the political context where the feedback loop is just so long and so stretched out that nobody really ever has to be accountable for any failure, and you always have a very clear other side to blame for things not working. This binary choice, like we're good, they're bad, the dark and the light. But if people live their lives around a lot of identity politics, you see the marketing power of this, where while it might be motivating, it's not for a lot of people producing better lives, because they have their failures justified by this assertion that they live in a cruel and unfair world. This is why my life sucks. This is why I'm unhappy, because the world is a wicked and shitty place. So this has a downside for people who are just trying to kick the can and not really offer solutions.
Well, and that's the key. Are you trying to sell a solution, or are you trying to sell power?
Right.
If you're trying to sell an actual solution, it can be used. The reason that it's not useful when it comes to politics is because politicians aren't trying to actually sell a solution in the most part. One of the hardest things for me to realize about my own biases is I spent most of my life as a hardcore leftist, and it's because I grew up on welfare and I thought Republicans hated the rich or hated the poor and they only cared about themselves. And then I got to a point where I realized, oh, Democrats can only ensure that I keep supporting them as long as they keep me poor.
Right.
And so they say they want to fix poverty, but if they do fix poverty, they lose their entire voter base.
Yeah.
So justifying their failures, here's two examples. On the right wing, the Mexicans took our jobs. It's not your fault. It's not the fault that it's not because your industry became irrelevant. It's not because you weren't working hard enough or you were demanding more money than you were worth. It's because those stinking Mexicans. Or on the other side, systemic racism. It's not because you haven't tried enough. It's not because we lowered the expectations for you, and then once you went into the real world, you weren't as well qualified as somebody who didn't have the expectations lowered for them. It's because systemic racism. That's why you're not getting ahead. And when it comes to politicians, though, they're not trying to sell a solution. They're just trying to sell you on giving them power. And or I guess I don't want to make that blanket statement, but I do kind of feel like that is a pretty applicable blanket statement. But yeah, if they're trying to sell a solution, you can use this to justify their failures as a way to sell them on your weight training exercise program or sell them on your business management program or whatever it is that you're trying to sell. But if you're not trying to sell a solution, you're just trying to sell somebody on voting for you so that you can have power over their lives, then yeah, the same tactic isn't going to bring about the same result, because you're not trying to get the same result.
Absolutely. So as we move on to the third one, I think we're going to see our biggest, clearest departure from the world of politics: allaying their fears, alleviating the panic or anxiety, actually being with people, or even if it's virtually, supporting people until they're not afraid of what they're fearing anymore. Correct me if you see other examples, but I don't see a lot of tie-ins with politics or media or perception management with that one, right? Who in that world is trying to allay fear?
I have some really good examples of that I'm going to jump into.
Ooh, I just thought of one too. I just thought of a weird one too, but go ahead. Yes.
So let's start with marketing. The reason why this is so important in marketing is a lot of times there's one thing that's holding people back. You got a great exercise program, but they've got a thyroid condition. Mm-hmm. And so they're thinking to themselves, well, it looks like this would work perfectly, but I've got a thyroid condition. Oh, well, that's cool. That totally understandable fear. We actually have a supplement that has these herbs that are specifically tailored towards people with thyroid conditions. So you take the supplement along with the exercise program and you don't have to worry about that anymore. There's a lot of times, another example is, well, this program looks great. I could totally see somebody, you know, it's a MLM, a multi-level marketing scheme. Program, whatever. Yeah, I could see somebody who's already got $1,000 to invest. It could totally work out for them, but I'm barely making it from paycheck to paycheck. Oh, dude, that's cool. I totally understand that. In fact, just 6 months ago, I was living on my sister's couch. I didn't have a penny to my name, and this program I was still able to make it. So you don't have $1,000 to get invested. I didn't have a penny to my name. I was homeless and sleeping on my sister's couch. I still was able to make it. So empathizing, saying, yeah, I understand the one hesitation or the one fear that you have about it. I'm not just going to say it's going to be okay. I'm going to give you a reason to feel okay about it. So your thyroid condition, cool. We've got this supplement that actually addresses that. You're penniless, cool. I was in the same position, and here's how I was able to still get involved with this and still make money, even though I didn't have $1,000 to start. So it's really about, I want you to take action, but you've got this fear of either you're going to fail if you try again, or because something about you or something about the market or something about the outside world. I'm not just going to laugh at you and say, oh, that's a stupid fear. And I'm not just going to patronize you and be like, oh, it's going to be okay, and pat you on the head. I'm going to actually give you something that helps alleviate that fear. And then we can move on past that point. And I want to know what your example was.
But again, it's about visibility, right? It's like, it's okay to be afraid. I legitimately understand that, right? I can relate to that. I've been in that kind of situation. Those were the examples that you were giving. The political example that I thought of was kind of a silly one, where as we see all of this chaos that has really existed, far left, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, like for middle America, for the silent majority, as it's been called, which I think is most people, they don't like Trump and they see that and they go, well, I don't like Trump, but I don't like that. I just kind of like how things are, and I'm, you know, not looking to be an activist. I'm not looking to watch cities burn, but I really feel like I'm kind of stuck in the middle. And if they start to get persuaded by, say, like Fox News, like Tucker Carlson or Rush Limbaugh or any of these people, that that is the left, right? That is the alternative to Trump. You can be with Trump, or, you know, you can burn down your city, right? You can be with the people who are burning down the cities. In comes, as Luke Rutkowski said on his T-shirt that I mentioned earlier, rich white guy and cop. Right? An entire campaign designed around allaying the possible fears of middle America. That's like, obviously these people are not those people in ski masks throwing Molotov cocktails. Rich white guy and cop, you know, that's I know rich white guys and cops.
So for the Democrats that are afraid of supporting Antifa and BLM, oh, well, we've got a law and order person on board. So you're still supporting us, but that fear of, am I supporting people who are burning cities to the ground? No. Rich white guy and cop.
Yeah, exactly. And old, I forget whether the T-shirt said old white guy or rich white guy, but both allay fears, you know?
Yeah. So the two examples that I had, number one, Donald Trump, we're going to build a wall. It's going to be a grand wall, the biggest wall that anybody's ever seen. And conservatives were like, well, that's great, but I got this fear about how are we going to pay for it? Oh, don't worry. The Mexicans are going to pay for it. So I made this promise. You've got this one fear that's holding you back. Oh, don't worry about it. We're going to get the Mexicans to pay for it. Same thing on the other side. We want to give free healthcare to everybody. We're going to give free healthcare even to the illegal aliens. We're going to make sure that everybody's taken care of, because nobody should have to die from something that's easily preventable just because they don't have healthcare. Well, that's great. We're 20-some trillion dollars in debt. How are we going to pay for it? Oh, don't worry. We're going to get the 1% to pay for it. So we're making this promise, and whatever your biggest fear about that promise is, oh, don't worry, rich old white guy and cop.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have to withdraw what I said before, where, you know, people in that political world, and I think we see a lot of people who are posting stuff like from CNN or The Washington Post on social media, and it seems like a really like tumultuous and stressful existence to be caught in this, because you're on this roller coaster, whether it's right or left, where you're going through, you know, all five of these stages constantly. But eventually there has to be that flattened out part, right? That non-scary part of the roller coaster where everybody can catch their breath and say, you know, we're building the wall, rich white guy and cop. Everything's going to be okay. And then it's right back to failures, dreams, suspicions, enemies. And then just occasionally it flattens out. Everybody catch your breath. Things are going to be okay. We have solutions. And then secretly under their breath, they say, and we also have ways of justifying these solutions once they are converted to failure by, you know, time and the law of unintended consequences. So, mm-hmm.
So you brought up suspicions, and that's the next one.
Right. Confirm their suspicions.
Yeah, we have this a lot in the libertarian on both sides, because there's like the heavy conspiracy theory side of the Libertarian Party, the wackos who think that we faked the moon landing.
Yep.
And then we also have the no, government is just so incompetent. They could never do that. And here's examples of incompetence and examples of incompetence and other examples of incompetence. So even inside of like our kind of middle of the road libertarian, we still have this, but it's people like being told they're right. And we have cognitive dissonance. We have confirmation bias. We look for evidence that we're right. We ignore evidence that we're wrong. And when people come to us, when people are introduced into our world, one of the quickest things they can do to gain our trust is agree with us and tell us that we're right. Mm. And instantly we're like, oh, I like this guy. Oh, I heard Brett talking about how they faked the moon landing. I love this School Sucks project podcast. I heard so-and-so talking about how to think that it was 9/11 was an inside job is just completely asinine because government's so incompetent. They could never pull something like that off. I love this new podcast. Mm. So being told that you're right, having your suspicions confirmed, it's one of the quickest ways to win people over, just to listen to what they say and tell them, yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Naming a show School Sucks accomplishes this. People look at that. They go, you know, I thought so. Let's see what this guy's all about. Yeah, I had that experience. Let's see what this guy's all about. So, okay, maybe that was a smart title. It just doesn't open every door that I want to open in life. But yeah, it also, the threat there, if you're not moving and you've been really critical of what we've called the liberty movement to the point where you've said, like, I'm not even interested in interacting with it anymore. If it's not going forward, that confirm your suspicion stage or point in the whole thing just kind of turns into a circle jerk, right? It just kind of turns into an echo chamber or a bubble. And, you know, now we live in the world where the walls around those things just get higher and higher all the time. And it's almost like it becomes a support system. And forward motion isn't even important anymore.
So I want to circle back to that, but yeah. I want to ask you, do you remember a book? It was, gosh, 10, 15 years ago. It was real popular. It was called Secret Cures or Hidden Cures They Don't Want You to Know About.
Yes. Love Hidden Cures They Don't Want You to Know About.
So that was basically the entire point of his marketing campaign was confirm their suspicions.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of cures out there. The pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know about it because they lose a bunch of money and they can't keep you hooked on their cures. And what if you, instead of having to take Prilosec, I think Prilosec is for heartburn, you could just cure it with a teaspoon of apple cider vinegar? Or what if instead of having to go get gastro bypass surgery or whatever the surgery is where they go into your stomach and they tie a knot around it, you could just eat this one food and it would increase your metabolism and you'd start shedding pounds like crazy. Mm-hmm. We all kind of feel like, yeah, I feel like the pharmaceutical companies are taking advantage of us. I look at the healthcare system. I look at how much money they're making off of us. I look at the opioid epidemic, and I realize that there's probably better ways to deal with headaches and deal with stress and deal with depression. And I look at the processed food, and I am shopping in the grocery store, and I look at the carts, and I look at what's in the cart, and then I look at the people, and I can see this connection between what they're eating and what they look like. And so, yeah, I feel like there's something going on there. And then this guy comes out with this book. And he says, hey, yeah, there's actually this giant conspiracy between the food companies, the pharmaceutical companies, the regulators, the FDA, and they're all in it against you. And buy my book so that you can stick it to them. And that was basically the whole premise of his marketing campaign, was confirm their suspicions. And the guy ended up, I mean, I think now he's actually in jail for some shady marketing that he did in a different industry, but the guy ended up making millions of dollars off of that one thing, confirming their suspicions.
Right. And it's not like he doesn't have a lot of smoke, you know, there to like point and say there's a fire here somewhere. Plausible presentation, I would say, by the way. But yeah, and then once you have the cures to sell, I mean, that's kind of the problem, right? Is that you're taking a real ill and then maybe superimposing a not a real solution in many cases.
Mm-hmm. And he had a brilliant funnel. It was actually buy the book. And then once you bought the book, it was three or four other things that, you know, that were similar to the tablespoon of apple cider vinegar solution. And then it was, oh, but I can't give away all the secrets in the book. You have to join my secret community, which is $59 a month. And then you're in his continuity program. So the book was just kind of like the tripwire. Out of everybody who's interested, who's willing to at least spend $20? And then out of everybody who spends the $20, a good percentage of them will also join the continuity program. I knew a few people that were in the continuity program. And it was a lot of just like old housewives remedies. And some of it, I mean, some of the stuff actually works. There are foods that you can eat that will increase your metabolism. You suck on a clove and it can get rid of a toothache for a while. So there are certain things out there that do work, and he put together a good collection of them, and he found a way to get away around the FDA regulations. But in one of his other ventures, he ended up making promises that he couldn't keep and ended up getting in trouble for it. But I guess in politics and in media, one of the things that I've been critical of both politics and media is that if they were held to the same truth in advertising standards that marketers are, marketers have to run things past lawyers. We have to jump through all kinds of hoops to make sure that we don't say anything that could be taken the wrong way or be even just slightly dishonest. If media and politicians were held to the same standards that we were, I think there'd be a lot less division in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the world we live in.
And that takes us to number five, just so smoothly, right? Because what's the difference is between what marketers can get away with and what politicians and media outlets can get away with is narrative. If you're doing shady marketing, you can't say, I don't know, I was possessed, a witch put a spell on me, aliens were mind controlling me. But if you're a politician or in the media, you've got enemies, right? You've got enemies to point at, like we've already talked about, and say it was their fault. They screwed it up. They did fake news. They confused everybody. Those people stopped this bill from being passed or stopped it from being effective or sabotaged this or sabotaged that. So the fifth one is nothing, this idea that nothing bonds people together like having a common enemy. And you can scale this all the way down to the job. Everybody's not like super comfortable or familiar. Like nobody is great friends. And four coworkers go out to lunch together. What are they talking about, right? They're talking about one of the coworkers who isn't there, because it's a very easy thing for people to bond around. Who is the other, right? The excluded. So obviously, when you take this into the arena of politics, where the subtext is literally like, we want to force a way of life on you at gunpoint if necessary, that enemy imagery becomes a lot more powerful. So that is the last part of the sentence. Help them throw rocks at their enemy, which obviously has enormous psychic payoff in that it is, I think, for people participating in that, a sense of self-efficacy, but it is also tribal, it's bonding, it has all those payoffs as well.
Yeah, and we see this, you mentioned Tucker Carlson earlier, I think he's a master at this. Trump is also a master at this, but on the other side, Rachel Maddow, Don Lemon, these people are all masters at, see those people on the other side, look at those one or two fringe wackos, the craziest people. They actually represent everybody on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's just as bad as they are. And it's not just that they're misguided, they're evil. They want to destroy your way of life. They want to destroy what it means to be an American. And thank God for us. We're here every single night to help throw rocks at those people. We're here to bring them up on stage. Tucker Carlson does a great job of picking out the most crazy people and bringing them on his show.
Yeah.
And showing how stupid they look.
And then using it to make a rule. Sorry, but then using it to make a rule. And this is one, just from like a logic standpoint, it's one really interesting thing to look out for. Two fallacies that Tucker Carlson uses, that CNN uses, that Rachel Maddow uses, and Trump uses as well. So the first is the fallacy of composition, where you find an outlier, a lunatic, and you... through the label of what they are, Republican, Democrat, progressive, college professor, sovereign citizen, using that label, you say, okay, so all people who are Republicans, sovereign citizen might have been a little extreme because they're extreme, but all Republicans, all college professors, all teachers, all stay-at-home moms are this lunatic. This is the avatar of that group. And then once you can redefine the group by the properties of this lunatic that you're putting in a spotlight, then you can do the fallacy of division, where you say, since we know this is a group of lunatics, here emerges a new person who is part of this group, right? He identifies as a Republican or a progressive or whatever. Therefore, the properties of this group that we defined earlier by showcasing this lunatic now apply back down to this person, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a very sloppy kind of heuristic. It works well with straw manning, right? Like not really digging into what a person's about or what their positions are. It's extremely effective and efficient.
So 1984 had the 2-minute hate.
Yes.
Where everybody got – and what was – I forget the guy's name that – and he wasn't even a real guy. He was just somebody that Big Brother had created in order to give somebody – someone to hate as the opposition of Big Brother. And that's kind of similar to what they do. In marketing, it's the same thing. And again, if there's smoke, it works better. If there's fire, it works great because sometimes there is fire. The corn companies get subsidies. The corn is a filler. Corn is what they feed chicken and cows to make them fat before slaughter. And now almost everything you eat is just chock full of corn, corn syrup, corn meal, corn whatever, corn chips, corn tortillas, sugar companies. They lobbied the government to make it look like fat was the problem. Fat's actually good for you. It's the sugar that's bad. I've got this high fat diet that cuts out the sugar and you're going to see amazing results. There is the bad guy. And if you can make them look even worse, you can make those mustache twirling sugar company CEOs who only care about the bottom line and don't care about all the diabetes and cancer that they're causing. And then you say, hey, but by buying my product, we're actually throwing rocks at those people. Not only are you taking money out of their pocket, you're showing them that you're onto them. And we're in my advertising campaign, I'm not afraid to stand up to those evil sugar and corn companies. I'm not afraid to stand up to the evil lobbyists and the regulators that let them get away with this. I'm going to stand up for you and I'm going to throw rocks at them on your behalf. And if you do that, again, instant allyship. And that's why I say all of this, instead of one sentence persuasion, it really is how to be an instant ally.
Yeah. And I think we might have mixed up, like mixing up politics in this led to me taking a very aggressive and kind of suspicious stance against all of it, just kind of looking back, because a lot of this isn't really that bad. Like that last example that you give is like, yeah, these people, and I say that all the time about school sucks, like they're our enemies of educational freedom. And if we just talked about like what educational freedom is and how great it is, eventually that's people are going to lose their motivation for actually pursuing it if they're not reminded that every day people are attacking it. It's one of the big, you know, I was a Free State Project member, and it was one of the big debates about do we get involved in politics or not, or do we stay true to our principles and not do that? One of the most motivating things as far as like moving that mission forward of the Free State Project is to see what the enemies of it were trying to do every day when they went to work in the state capitol, right? Mm-hmm. It's catalyzing, it's motivating, it's unifying, it's all of those things. And it's perfectly legitimate if you have, I would say, a genuine and noble outcome that you've already formulated that you're trying to move towards yourself and you're trying to bring other people along with you. Yeah. Find out who your enemies are, throw some metaphorical rocks at them, and I think that is a team, that is a fine team-building exercise.
I think the difference that we need to clarify is when it comes to persuasion, when it comes to influence, what's the difference between persuasion and manipulation? And I think that what it comes down to is afterwards, if the person buys into your rhetoric, if the person buys into your persuasion or buys into your argument and they buy into your solution, are they going to rejoice in the results or are they going to regret the results? Mm. And if you're trying to get something accomplished, if you're trying to get people to buy into something that you know and you have a really good indication that they're going to rejoice in, then it's persuasion. But if you're trying to get somebody to buy into something that you know deep down they're probably going to end up regretting, then it's manipulation. And I think that that's what it is. Are they going to rejoice in the results or are they going to regret the results? And that's kind of where, for me, that's when I'm taking on a project, when I'm deciding whether I'm going to write for a particular product or a particular solution, that's kind of where I'm at. Do I feel like the people that this is right for are going to rejoice in the results, or do I feel like they're going to regret? And if I feel like there's any kind of regret whatsoever, I just won't take on the project. I think that that's probably a good moral compass on how to decide. All of this stuff, it's a double-edged sword. It can be used for good. It can be used for bad. And that's what I always go back to. Will the people rejoice or will they regret?
That is awesome. That is extremely useful. And it actually brings me to a couple of production notes as we wind the conversation to a close here. Number one, we said we're going to do this every month. At the end of every month, we're going to get together and we're going to have one of these conversations. So what are we going to call it? I wanted to run a couple of title ideas by you. One was actually marketing versus manipulation. And the other one was something that you called yourself in the very, man, you nailed it with the dark arts of marketing, right? That is the name of the show, the Dark Arts of Marketing podcast, because that's perfect. But first episode, you said something like you are a professional emotional manipulator for hire, right? I love that as a title, but I'm open to other ideas as well. And while you think about that for a second, I love this conversation so much that these are going to be bonus shows for the Free Market Squad and the supporting listeners of School Sucks. But every Friday, I try to make bonus content previews available for the main podcast audience. I think this one time, if it's okay with you, I'd just like to put this whole thing out.
Absolutely. I think this would be a good episode to have full context of.
So I will do that. Tomorrow's Friday. So perfect. Any thoughts on titles before we wrap this up?
Let's leave it open and think about it over the next month. And by next month, we should have a title for this series.
All right. Perfect. So Nathan Fraser, can you just give your most relevant links for my audience before we wrap up today?
Yeah. So the two things that I'm most interested in my own work right now, the podcast, the Dark Arts of Marketing podcast, and you can find that at thedampodcast.com, thedampodcast.com. And then I do have a small private community where we talk about marketing and we have some trainings from some of the world's greatest marketers and copywriters. And if you are interested in joining that community, you can find that at freemarketsquad.com or fmsmastermind.com.
Awesome. All right, Nathan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brett. I enjoyed it.